Thank you, Bob. Our next panelist is a young man who has diverse experience in journalism and in politics. He's a graduate of the Annenberg School of Communications, University of Pennsylvania, where he took his master's in 1962. He has been a teacher and supervisor of student teachers at the University of Pennsylvania. In 1968, he was a speechwriter in the Nixon campaign and served as a White House staff assistant in 1969 and 1970. From 1970 to 1972, he served with the United States Information Agency as assistant director. He then went on to serve on the staff of Senator James L. Buckley, and most recently has become the Washington editor of American Views. He's the author of a recently published book called Street Corner Conservative, published by Arlington House. Would you please welcome Mr. William F. Gavin.
Thank you, Stan, very much. I was reminding Stan the last time we met, it shows you how in I am in conservative circles. The last time we met, we both watched something which, at least in a peripheral way, has to do with Kevin Phillips' thesis today. We watched the launching of the Midnight Apollo. And talking about a technological revolution, I don't know about you, Stan, I haven't forgotten the experience that brought home to me as a kind of a makeshift humanist of what the scientific and technological revolution is all about. You have to be there, you have to feel the stands under you shake and hear that unearthly, ungodly sound coming up for a couple of miles away out there to know what the technological revolution is. But as Mr. Phillips has reminded us, we have a more homely reminder of that in our own homes. And I'd like to speak to that for the next two or three minutes. It's with an enviable sense of timing that Kevin Phillips fires his big guns at, among others, the network newsmen. Consider the blunders they've committed in just the past few weeks. Armed with computers, live-in pollsters, and so far as I know, pedigreed bloodhounds, the media have outdone themselves in covering every aspect of this campaign. Yet with all their gadgets, plus Eric Severide, the networks didn't even hint to their viewers that Ronald Reagan had a chance in North Carolina. If this be expertise, God help us from ignorance. And more to Mr. Phillips' point, and relevant to what he said today, where was the power of the media, this omnipotent thing, manifested in this case? Then, of course, my delightful thing, there was last Tuesday's primary, in which NBC and ABC gave Mo Udall a victory, while Wisconsin voters perversely decided otherwise. I'm surprised the networks haven't brought suit against the voters for breach of contract. But at any rate, it's not been a good time for the experts. You can add to all these disasters the ethical problems raised by the Woodward Bernstein book, which invents thoughts for individuals who now claim it didn't happen that way. And finally, as an echo of yesteryear, we have the smash hit movie of All the President's Men with Robert Redford and a cast of thousands. I understand the film downplays the attempt of the star reporters to get grand jurors to give them secret information. The film also doesn't go into the curious fact that this blatant attempt to interfere in the judicial process resulted in nothing more than a verbal reprimand from Judge John Sirica. Hanging John Sirica, you may recall, is the man whose draconian sentences against certain Watergate defendants led some to believe he was against the death penalty only because it wasn't cruel and unusual enough. Now, the events I've spoken of, and there are others, are relevant to Mr. Phillips' address today. They were done by those who claim, one, to be experts, two, to be trustees of the public's right to know, and three, who asked the public to buy their services, as Mr. Phillips points out correctly, on the basis of what Mr. Phillips has accurately described as their quasi-public status. Now, his analysis of the power of the media is, to me, quite simply beyond debate. It is a given. What is debatable, however, is whether that power can always be used in ways which the media barons want to use it. I think the coverage of the campaign is a pretty good example of their flubbing it here. I, for one example, doubt the theory of the mediagenic candidate. We simply have had too many mediagenic candidates defeated and wholly unmediagenic candidates elected to put much trust in the theory that television can, as LBJ suggested, make candidates out of nothing. But Mr. Phillips, with that passion for detail and that great knowledge he has, zeroes in on the real strength of the media, and it is this, and I quote, and I think this is the essential part of it: to trumpet an issue, cripple a power center, fan a mood, create a villain, scuttle a war. He avoids the pitfalls of most media criticism and goes to the heart of the matter. Media do exert an enormous influence in shaping the psychological and conceptual frameworks in which we lead our lives. The question, as Dr. Posini reminded us this afternoon at lunch, is what is to be done. And here we come to problems in his thesis, and I want to deal with essentially political ones. I'm not saying, obviously, that they're only political ones. I am also not saying that because they're all political ones, his thesis is therefore invalid. I just want to speak to the political ones because they're the only ones I know anything about. Let me deal with it here. Mr. Phillips states, and quite correctly, that his suggestions as to how the media might be brought under control must be understood for purposes of today's discussion in a political vacuum. But we don't live in a political vacuum. We live in a political world in which changes cannot be made unless those who desire change have the political power, or, since I'm in Mayor Daley's city, clout, to bring it about. Now, this power doesn't have to be what I would call first-hand political power. That is, those who want to change do not necessarily have to have sufficient numbers or high positions to do the job. You can have second-hand power. Now, second-hand power, I describe, is the power to get other powerful groups to help you. The civil rights victories of the 1960s were won not because black leaders had power, but because they had second-hand power in media and in intellectual circles. So my basic question for Kevin Phillips is this: what kind of power do conservatives and neo-populists, or conservatives or neo-populists, have to bring about the changes he desires? My feeling is that they lack sufficient first-hand power, both in the nation and in Washington, and that the kind of second-hand power they need is, unfortunately, in the control of precisely those centers of power Mr. Phillips seeks to regulate. I suspect that the neo-populist movement Mr. Phillips counts on is at the very least a questionable political phenomenon, and in all probability not the kind of political phenomenon, even if it does exist, to be able to bring specific pressures to bear in the way Mr. Phillips desires. At the present, there is not a single national political figure or even a group with any chance of gaining power who could serve as the leader of the kind of fight Mr. Phillips urges. Without a leader, and with a movement that may or may not be there to provide main force, all ideas about regulation simply aren't going to add up to much. Conservatives have, in the recent past, been fooled by polls showing alleged conservative political majorities. Now, I do not for a moment doubt that the majority of the American people are in most ways conservative. In fact, I wrote a book about that, precisely that point. But focusing the power of these various kinds of conservatism, some of which may be neo-populist in form, into a specific and highly controversial area for the purpose of political change is extremely difficult in the area he is talking about. You'll notice I haven't addressed the substance of Mr. Phillips' suggestions for reform of the media. This is not because I think these suggestions do not demand inquiry, but only because I believe the political aspect of his speech is of basic importance. In conclusion, I know Mr. Phillips will understand the spirit in which I say this. Today he has played the role of a political Karl Marx. He seeks not only to explain the world of the communications revolution, but to change it, a refreshing attitude for conservative intellectual. He seems to be saying to us, stop talking to each other. Conservatives, arise, regulate others as you have been regulated. You have nothing to lose but your cliches. I don't think he is right, but I'm damn glad he said it. Thank you.